Everyone. It is Tuesday, March 4th, and I'm calling to order the Committee on Housing and Homelessness Prevention. Quorum is not yet present, but that's okay because we're laying all these bills over. There are five bills on the agenda today. We are laying them all over for possible inclusion. We do have a number of testifiers, so if testifiers can please limit your testimony to 2 minutes or less. The first bill in front of us is Senate File 1610 by Senator Umover-Bayton. Whenever you're ready, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm excited to bring this bill before the committee today. In 2023, you all had allocated $100 million to pilot the First Generation Home Buyers Down Payment Assistance Fund. That's led by the Midwest Minnesota Community Development Corporation, or MMCDC, and thank you so much for your support. We have some exciting results to go into today, but the bill before you is pushing for funding to extend this program beyond its initial one-time launch funding as follows: $25 million in fiscal year 26 and an annual $50 million in fiscal year 27. I just want to highlight a few changes from the previous bill. Of course, establishing this as a full program and not just a pilot. There's a change to the definition of eligible homebuyer to be any adult with an income at or below 100% statewide income as opposed to area median income previously. Setting the maximum assistance cap beginning in fiscal year 27 to 10% of the median statewide home sales price as determined by the Minnesota Realtors annual report opposed to the current cap that's $32,000. And then it updates the loan structure to not require payments or interest over the five-year forgivable period. It does preserve the current standard of requiring payment if the owner sells the property or converts the unit to non-owner occupancy. It allows MMCDC to use recaptured funds to further assist home buyers. Updates the maximum amount of administrative costs. So, you know, previously we had the $3,200 per loan, and just clarifying, this would be 10% of the appropriation. And then it strikes credit score information from the currently required annual report. But now on to all the exciting things about the program, which is helping lower income households without access to generational wealth surmount the down payment hurdle and access the wealth building benefits of home ownership. There's a fact sheet that you all have and a copy of the annual report, and the results are, again, really exciting. I'd encourage you to review them in more detail, but I just do wanna highlight a few things. 600 new homeowners bought homes with the help of the program during its first 7 months. 90% of those utilizing the program were Black, Indigenous, people of color, or BIPOC households, which is really helping reduce Minnesota's disproportionately high racial home ownership gap. And then according to the data compiled by the National Association of Realtors, the full economic impact, or the social return on investment, of the typical home sale in Minnesota is more than $100,000. And an Urban Institute summary of several studies indicates that the home ownership has really a strong correlation to short-term and long-term improvements in education, health, and economic outcomes for new homeowners and their families. I also want to say this structure of the community fund is really supporting consumer choice, and it allows home buyers to choose the lender and the mortgage product that meets their needs. I know there were some questions too about all the different mortgage products that are available. There are those interest-free products that have been utilized by some buyers, just to clarify. Buyers have used more than 100 unique lenders already. And then the community fund does equip first generation buyers with knowledge and makes their offers really stronger in a tight real estate market. So they do home buyer education before applying, And that really ensures that home buyers are well prepared and understand what they're committing to. And buyers can secure these down payment assistance funds for up to 5 months, which really removes uncertainty and makes offers more competitive. So I'll just end by saying that I think this program is really essential to help more families build generational wealth, again, to set that strong foundation for housing stability, improved health and education outcomes, employment opportunities, and this is supported by this really diverse coalition of more than 30 industry groups and nonprofits across the state, including Habitat for Humanity, NeighborWorks Home Partners, Three Rivers, Bell Bank Mortgage, and the Minnesota Realtors, and you will hear from them today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Umu-Verbaten. We'll move to testimony. First, I have Julie Nelmark and Jeru Gabez. You can also come up to the table and we'll move through testimony. Julie, I believe you might be online.
I am online, yes. Thank
Great.
You.
Introduce yourself and begin your testimony whenever you're ready.
All right. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today about the first-gen DPA program. I'm Julia Nelmark, President and CEO of Midwest Minnesota Community Development Corporation, or MMCDC. As you know, Minnesota's first-gen homebuyer DPA program was enacted in May of 23, with MMCDC indicated as the program administrator. We worked with Minnesota Housing to review in detail the program plans and guidelines and assure compliance with the legislation as well as with broader state requirements. MMCDC conducted an RFP process in early 2024 to identify 10 partner DPA lenders, reviewing their experience, certifications, licensing, and capacity. With industry partners, we conducted training for the partner DPA lenders, as well as for first mortgage lenders, realtors, and home buyer education providers. The first gen DPA program was designed with input from a broad cross-sector group, including realtors, first mortgage lenders, home buyer ed providers, nonprofit community lenders, and more. MMCDC brought experience and scale to the program, having 54 years of experience in lending and housing development. Specifically, we have been providing first mortgage lending and down payment assistance for 27 years. With the majority of our first mortgages sold on the secondary market, we have done so within regulatory guidelines and have robust policies and procedures to ensure compliance with state and federal requirements. The Community DPA program has one website to provide information to prospective borrowers and others. This website includes recordings of trainings conducted for first mortgage lenders, realtors, and home buyer ed providers so that all providers can offer customers consistent and accurate information. This website is also the sole access point to apply for the first-gen community DPA funds. It includes translation function for dozens of languages to provide broad access to all Minnesotans. MMCDC reviews all applications for completeness and ensures equal access to complete applications on a first-come, first-served basis. We assign complete applications to partner DPA lenders across the state. To support those lenders, we provide a detailed program guide, form loan documents, training, marketing, and support for questions. We conduct file audits on 10% of closed loans for program compliance, review all closed loan files for completeness, collect all closed loan documents via a securebox.com site, and offer loan servicing when needed. We also send 10% of closed loans to Minnesota Housing for audit, monthly reports on closed loans, reservations, commitments, and request monthly funding based on scheduled closings, commitments, and reservations. We also conduct periodic program reviews with industry partners to refine and adjust as appropriate. This model has worked well to provide the first-gen DPA loans to borrowers across Minnesota, allowing them to choose the best mortgage product to meet their needs. With home buyer ed required prior to the purchase agreement, This model sets up the home buyers for long-term success by entering the buying process with strong information on what they can afford to buy and maintain over the long term. We signed our contract with Minnesota Housing in May 2024, and the first CPA loan in this program was originated in late 24. As Senator Umu Verbaten indicated, through the first 7 months of the program, we have collectively supported over 600 households with about $18 million of DPA loans. We have commitments, closings, and reservations for about 35% of the loan funds. With the pace we are seeing at this point in the program, we expect to be fully committed in the mid summer to early fall of 2025. Thus, the request for additional funding in the second half of this biennium. With that, I will finish up and be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nomark. Ms. Gobeze, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And I will just say Jason Peterson is on deck and can come up to the table as well.
Thank you, Chair Port, and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today in support of the First Generation Down Payment Assistance Program. My name is Jeru Gobeze, and I'm the Advocacy Director for Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota, a statewide support organization that provides training, technical assistance, lending, and grants to the 24 local Habitat affiliates in Minnesota. In partnership with them, we are dedicated to increasing access to affordable homeownership opportunities across our state and closing the racial homeownership gap. Habitat is also part of Homeownership Minnesota Coalition, which also has this as a top priority and has submitted a letter of support. Homeownership remains one of the most effective pathways to economic stability and generational wealth building, yet many first-generation homebuyers struggle to overcome the significant barriers of a down payment. We see this in rural Minnesota, where limited housing supply and rising costs create additional obstacles. Senate File 1610 offers a critical solution by providing much-needed down payment assistance to first-generation homebuyers, helping them secure stable housing and invest in their families and communities. A key strength of first-gen DPA is its flexibility to be used in conjunction with USDA Section 502 direct loans, a vital financing tool for low and moderate income home buyers in rural areas. These loans provide an affordable path to homeownership. By pairing first-gen DPA with USDA direct loans, Habitat affiliates have been able to support access to homeownership opportunities for families across the state. For example, in communities in northern Minnesota served by Itasca County Habitat, recently, a home buyer who would otherwise be locked out of housing market was able to purchase a home thanks to this DPA and affordable mortgage product. The demand for homeownership opportunities in these regions is growing, and these continued investments would ensure that more first-generation home buyers have the chance to build equity, establish roots, and contribute to the economic vitality of their communities. I urge you to support this and break the cycle of housing insecurity for first-generation home buyers across Minnesota. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Next on the list, I have Mikeeta Davis, and then Mr. Peterson, please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Thank you so much for having me this afternoon. My name is Jason Peterson. I'm the Executive Director of NeighborWorks Home Partners. We're a Minnesota-based nonprofit, NeighborWorks America Home Ownership Center, and also a member of Homeownership Minnesota. We work with and support about 1,500 families a year to help them buy, fix, and keep what is likely one of the biggest investments in their lives, their home. In the last year alone, our work culminated in almost $133 million of investment into Minnesota communities. Our organization was one of the first groups to pilot a first-generation down payment program back in 2017. We found this program to be a very crucial way to support lower-income families without access to generational wealth overcome the largest barrier for homeowners, the upfront costs. At NeighborWorks Home Partners, we provide both the lending resources such as down payment assistance, as well as the wraparound support services, including homeownership, advising, counseling, and education to empower families with the knowledge to be successful. Our organization provides a number of down payment assistance programs, and we have been fortunate to be one of the administrators for the Community First Generation program. While we had success piloting this program, the impact was limited based on the investment that we had. The scope and scale of this program has been a game changer for families all across Minnesota seeking to become homeowners, but do not have access to this generational wealth. To date, our organization has closed 119 first-generation loans. This includes in 14 counties, and we worked with over 50 individual lenders. I do want to just touch on a few key components of this program that I think are very important related to our organization specifically. The first is fund reservation. This is a key distinction. Most down payment programs do not provide the opportunity for fund reservation, or basically a pre-approval of funds, so funds are set aside for you. Most programs require a purchase agreement to be entered and a transaction to be occurring. This is challenging for low-income borrowers as it makes their offers often less competitive and the closings depending on funds available. This unique aspect of this program really allows for these low-income families to put in competitive offers and for all parties to know that the transaction will occur. The other one I do want to touch on is homebuyer education. As an organization, we provided over 600 families with homebuyer education in the last year alone. And so we see firsthand the importance of this education. Knowledge is power, and the goal of this education is to provide these borrowers with the information to not only be informed, but to be successful homeowners long term. So we have seen with this program the requirement that the borrower complete this education prior to getting a pre-approval for these funds to be very important. They're not starting the process and receiving this education midterm, mid-process. They are getting this education prior to them moving forward and meeting with professionals. This is an important piece so folks have the knowledge and the power when making these decisions. And lastly, I would just like to highlight the importance of consumer choice. As I mentioned, we worked with almost 120 families, and that's 50 different lenders, 50. So that gives folks the opportunity to work with any lender they want, including local credit unions, including large and small lenders, and that consumer choice is really important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Up next on deck, I have Casey Keir, and then Ms. Davis. Welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself and present your testimony, please.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Senators. My name is Maikita Davis. I'm a homeownership advisor with Three Rivers Community Action. And I'm here to speak today in support of the First Generation Community Down Payment Assistance Fund as someone who's worked directly with underserved families in greater Minnesota. I've seen firsthand how transformative this program can be. For many in my community, homeownership has felt out of reach for generations. Systemic barriers from redlining to inequitable access to credit have left families without the generational wealth needed to secure a home. This program is changing that. I've personally worked with families who, for the first time in their family's history, are able to be competitive in purchasing a home, and not just any home, but a safe and stable one that allows them to build long-term financial security. However, trust takes time. Programs like this need to be more than just pilots. They need longevity. Families need to understand and access these resources, and the community needs to see success stories multiply. And when that happens, more families will take the leap into home ownership, creating generational wealth and strengthening our communities as well. One example is the journey of Rika. She's a first-generation college student. Went to college, became a registered nurse, and wanted to achieve the American dream of owning her own home. But due to being the most successful person in her family network, she's often asked for financial support from different family members, making it impossible for her to create a safety nest and a savings to put money down on a home. So when she came to us wanting to achieve the American dream, I was like, of course, this is the perfect program. I have the perfect program for you. And she was able to use the First Generation Down Payment Assistance Fund to purchase the first home in her family, not just for her two boys, but for her entire family, so they can have barbecues and get-togethers at the house. And this is why this program works. It's making homeownership possible for families who have been historically excluded. I urge you to extend this program so that we can continue breaking down barriers and creating lasting change. Thank you. I also see that HECAT's on the agenda today. HECAT supports our work as homeownership advisors in meaningful ways. It allows us to meet different households where they're at and help them achieve their dreams. So I also want to extend our support at Three Rivers to that bill as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Next on the list is Mr. Egger. Ms. Kier, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Chair Port and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify in support of funding for the First Generation Down Payment Assistance Program. My name is Casey Kier, and I'm the National Community Development Manager for Bell Bank Mortgage. Bell Bank is the largest family and employee-owned bank in the Upper Midwest and also the largest originator of residential mortgage lending in Minnesota. We have locations across the state, including throughout Greater Minnesota. Homeownership affordability continues to be a challenge for us statewide, with higher interest rates, lack of inventory, and higher home prices. This has made homeownership out of reach for many buyers across the state, but especially for first-generation homebuyers that haven't had access to the generational wealth that comes with homeownership. One of the biggest barriers to homeownership we've seen is the need for down payment assistance, which these resources provide. This funding has resulted in expanded access to homeownership, homeownership stability, education for homebuyers, wealth building, and is helping to close the gap for communities of color. It's not only a good investment in Minnesota for individuals and families, but also an investment in our communities. There is strong mortgage industry support for the First Generation Down Payment Assistance Program, not only from Bell, but also from many mortgage lenders across the state, with utilization by more than 100 different lenders statewide. Keenan Raverty, my colleague from Bell Bank, chairs the Government Affairs Committee for the Minnesota Mortgage Association, which is the professional trade organization for the mortgage industry in Minnesota. He couldn't be here in person today, but affirms strong continued support from the Minnesota Mortgage Association. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Kier. Welcome back to the committee. Mr. Egger, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Egger, and I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors. And I guess the blessing and the curse of going last is everything I was going to say to you today has been taken. So I'm just going to share a couple of other points. But I want to thank the author and our coalition partners who it's a sign that you have the right author on a bill and the right coalition partners when you're left with nothing to say as the last testifier. But Minnesota Realtors, our 2025 session agenda includes support for making this a permanent ongoing program to provide an opportunity for more sustainable home ownership and to reduce Minnesota's racial home ownership gap. This is an important priority for us that we've had the pleasure of being involved with for the past 5 years with the Minnesota Home Ownership Center, Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, Senator Mover Baton, our House author, Representative Agbaje, and so many other coalition partners that you've heard from today and who are on the fact sheet that you received in your packet. Mr. Peterson mentioned a couple of the elements of the program that we also feel are very important for home buyers, and that's the choice of lender. You can participants in this program that receive fund assistance can work with the mortgage lender of their choice. That's really critical. You heard the data around that from our other testifiers. And also the importance of being able to reserve funds as you're shopping for a home. That is so critical to know those assistance dollars are going to be ready when that home buyer finds the home of their dreams. So those are just a couple of points that you heard from other testifiers that I'd like to emphasize. And also just, Madam Chair, just a few numbers that I shared with the committee earlier, but I think are really relevant today. And the number 93, that was in our housing affordability index that a median income family is only making 93% of what's required to qualify for a mortgage on a median priced home. $2,551. That's the median PITI payment statewide in Minnesota right now. That's gone up significantly over the past few years. And finally, 24. That's the percentage of first-time home buyers nationwide. Last year, the lowest number since our National Association of Realtors has been tracking that number. And this bill is really important to addressing all of those factors for so many home buyers in Minnesota. Already you've heard 600 to date in just the past 7 months. So really encourage your support. We know your targets are going to be extremely tight, but encourage your general support for home ownership and your budget target, and specifically finding some room in there at some level for this program to keep it going. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Egger. Members, discussion? Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Egger, can you the numbers you were just citing, do we have that handout?
Mr. Egger?
Madam Chair, Senator Lucero, this was in the presentation that I gave to the committee, so you have all those slides.
Perfect.
Yes, yes, you have that information, not today in a handout, but previously.
Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just the number, and I appreciate that we have it. We get flooded with information and metrics. But could you just repeat what I think I heard you just say, which is the average PITI now in Minnesota is $2,500?
Mr. Egger.
Madam Chair, Senator Lucero, our research director, David Arbit, has data that shows in 2024 the monthly PITI payment on a median-priced home in Minnesota, so this is a statewide number, $2,551 per month.
Senator Lucero?
Madam Chair, yikes.
Other discussion members? Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Umer-Verbaten, for bringing this bill. This is an excellent program that has proven benefits. I will say during the interim, there was a community meeting around this topic, around this program, and it was packed. The room was full. There was great interest from people about this program. It was great. It was good information shared. People were very interested. We know that this program works to bring down the racial disparities we have in this state. We know that homeownership is a way for families to build that generational wealth. We know that when people have that safe, stable home, it has impacts into health and education and early childhood and all of the spaces. And so I also just want to name, I appreciate what you've highlighted around the different mortgage options. And it came up quite a bit in the community meeting in Rochester around the desire and the need for the non-interest options. And so that really is valued, and appreciate that it works within this program as well. So it's a great program. I hope we can continue and expand it. Thank you.
Senator Dreheim.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for bringing the bill forward, and thank a big shout out, I guess, goes out to everybody that worked on it over the years, and I know it's been a long haul. Just reminding the public that the targets probably will be a lot smaller than this bill. Just a little reality check on that. Unfortunately, I have zero control over that. Senator Port will have to lobby for the committee to get what she can get. But I guess this is only part of the solution. And the underlying problem still is that we do not have enough inventory. So even if they are fortunate enough to get some help, they still have to find a home. And so I just want to remind people that we still have a lot of work to do on the inventory side of the equation. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dreheim. And Senator Umer-Verbaten, I just want to thank you again for bringing this bill. I know how hard you advocated for this 2 years ago, and you really have the support to back up that work and show that this was a success. I love the ability for folks to have that guarantee before they put an offer in. It really, as quickly as homes are selling right now, it really is a critical piece. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward, and we will lay over Senate File 1610 for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Umuva-Bayton.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up is Senate File 1533, Senator Muhammad. Senator Muhammad, whenever you're ready, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be quick. Before you is Senate File 1533, which is funding for the Home Ownership Education Counseling and Training Fund to $2 million annually. Owning a home is one of the most significant steps toward financial stability and generational wealth. Senator Umuva-Bayton just touched on that. Yet, for many first-time homeowners, the process can be overwhelming and full of unexpected challenges. As a first-time homeowner myself, I understand firsthand the struggles. This investment ensures that more Minnesotans, especially those from underserved communities, have access to the guidance and education needed to achieve and sustain home ownership. And I've got, I think, a testifier with me, and then we'll take questions.
Thank you, Senator Muhammad. First up, I have Noah Hobbs, I believe is virtual. Mr. Hobbs.
Thank you, Chair Port. My name is Noah Hobbs. I'm the Director of Strategy and Policy at Wonder of Community Housing, and we operate a community land trust up in Duluth, Minnesota, and we do affordable multifamily development. We do, we're a certified community development financial institution where we provide down payment assistance loans and home improvement loans to folks in our area. And our service region is from Cloquet all the way to Grand Rapids and over to Grand Marais. And so it's a pretty broad rural area. And we also provide home buyer education and counseling as well. And so HECAD funding allows One Roof to provide home buyer education and counseling services, which is in the form of bi-monthly courses, 4 hours for folks to make it work for their schedule. And then we'll offer a Saturday as well for folks wanting to do the long slog of 8 hours to meet that threshold. We also provide one-on-one pre-purchase counseling as well. And during this time, it's no secret that purchasing a home is more and more expensive. It's not not great for first-time home buyers, but we've seen an increase in our service numbers every year. And so we're serving about 180 folks going through the pre-purchase counseling and then also another 260 individuals going through our 8-hour course. And so what this means is that we're setting folks up to get, you know, better credit, they're building equity, they're putting down roots in their community, all because they're able to purchase a home and be competitive with utilizing a variety of first-time homebuyer mortgages or down payment services as well, that these courses qualify many borrowers to use from various lenders. And so this funding is really important to the work that we do and important to the region that that we serve up in northeastern Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hobbs. Next up, I have Roxanne Young-Kimball, and after that, Amber Legger.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Port and members of the committee. My name is Roxanne Young-Kimball, and I'm the president of the Minnesota Homeownership Center. Our nonprofit organization is a capacity-building intermediary that provides substantive support to the Homebuyer Education Counseling and Training, or HECAT, program. We leverage state resources with federal and foundation funding, host certification trainings, and regularly audit files to maintain the professional credentials and standards of counselors, maintain the home stretch statewide homebuyer education curriculum, track outcomes through a statewide technology system that we host, and build relationships with industry professionals, such as lenders and realtors, to create a supportive ecosystem that advances access to homeownership in our state. Currently, we receive no funding from HECAT to sustain this work, and we request a 10% fee to sustain these services throughout the state. The HECAT program is a critical, low-cost, high-impact strategy for unlocking the American dream of homeownership. The program funds a spectrum of housing counseling designed to support and empower residents to navigate the home buying process, which is incredibly complicated. We offer one-on-one credit building and budgeting to get mortgage ready, homebuyer education offered in partnership with lenders and realtors to get purchase ready, and foreclosure prevention counseling to stabilize homeownership at risk. Our services are offered throughout Minnesota in multiple languages, including Spanish, Somali, and Hmong, both in person and virtually. The housing counselors that deliver HECAT services are trained and embedded in 30 different nonprofit organizations across the state, about half in Greater Minnesota and half in the Twin Cities Metro. Several are here speaking today. Counseling services through HECAT are third-party, neutral, and center-informed decision-making and housing stability rather than commissions. It's especially helpful for first-time and first-generation homebuyers. In the last biennium, HECAT counselors reached approximately 8,000 households for homebuyer readiness counseling and another 2,000 households through foreclosure prevention counseling. While counseling services are open to anyone, our outreach focuses on reaching homebuyers who experience the highest barriers to accessing homeownership: low and moderate income households, households of color, and first-time and first-generation homebuyers. Funding of $2 million a year equates to around $250 per household served. I'm a believer in this program because I was a beneficiary. I attended a home stretch training, I met with a homeownership advisor, and my advisor connected me to the down payment assistance lender and realtor that helped me buy my first home, and I still live in that home today. Every Minnesotan should have access to make an informed choice about homeownership. I thank Senator Muhammad for championing this bill and hope you will make the necessary investment in HECAT that empowers Minnesota residents to navigate the largest financial decision of most households' lives. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Legger, please introduce yourself for the committee and begin your testimony. And after that, I have Jeff Wills.
Anin Buju. Indigenous Amber. Hello, my name is Amber. I am a direct descendant from Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Thank you, Chair Port and Senator Mohammed. My name is Amber Leisure. I am the Mortgage Foreclosure Prevention Program Manager with Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. MFPP has become a staple of Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity serving the seven county metro area since 1995. HECAT has provided MFPP funding to support foreclosure prevention, allowing us to educate homeowners of their rights when it comes to preserving their home due to foreclosure. We receive inquiries about direct financial assistance, HOA fees and assessments, understanding loan terms, along with those that we have received a pre-foreclosure notice and are panicked. When people fear they're facing foreclosure, we can help apply for loan modifications, speak with their mortgage servicer on their behalf, and discuss what other workout options are available, assisting them with reviewing their monthly financial expenses and, when possible, making changes to support a healthier financial foundation moving forward. Recently, a veteran homeowner contacted us to request assistance as she thought she was roughly 6 to 7 months behind on her mortgage payments. She was facing a sheriff's sale and was doing what she could to increase her income to get caught up, including picking up another job. As we worked together to ensure that she was accessing all resources available to her, including VA retention options, as she was unaware that was even an option for her. Ultimately, homeowner's outcome was successful and she was able to keep her home. In the 2024 fiscal year of Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity, MFPP successfully assisted 31 homeowners in keeping their home. 100% of the homeowners who completed the program through its entirety found resolutions, resources, and/or referrals. The impact that MFPP has on our community is beyond what numbers I can show you. The true impact is when a family is able to sleep in their home at night without the stress and fear of being homeless tomorrow. By providing resources to homeowners, we are preserving homeownership and assisting in providing them with a sustainable outcome with the goal to perpetuate generational wealth among persons of color and low to moderate income families. Miigwech, thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Wills, please introduce yourself and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, esteemed members of the Senate and Housing Committee. My name is Jeff Wills, and I serve as the Economic Services Manager and HUD-certified housing counselor at Model Cities of St. Paul. While anyone can utilize our home buyer advising and education services supported by HECAT, we target those who have the longest path to realizing their dreams of homeownership. We're proud to have contributed towards the success of over 50 households who have successfully purchased a home within the last year. As much as I'd like to take up the day sharing our client successes, I'd like to read this email from the latest client to enter the ranks of homeowner. Hello, Jeff. I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you. One of the best decisions we made was having you involved in our house process. We closed last Friday. It would not have happened without you. You made our dream come true. If you did not introduce us to Cameron, we would not have gotten that house. He was just awesome, you as well. Your advice was truly appreciated. We took your advice and we were able to make it. We can't forget you, so thank you. You helped a family of color get a house. We are eternally grateful. This family attended our home buyers workshop this past summer after learning of the first generation programs offered through the state, then chose to sign up for our one-on-one home buyer counseling. In our first meeting, they admitted to feeling defeated by this home buying process. The home buying team they initially hired made them feel as if homeownership was too far out of reach. We created a financial plan with this family that re-energized them enough to execute a strategy that increased their savings by over $6,000 and increased their credit score by 30 points by the time they reached the closing table. Our role as housing counselors exists because the system surrounding housing has contributed towards Minnesota having one of the worst racial homeownership disparities in the country. Owning a home is not only a financial goal, but also a cornerstone of achieving long-term stability. It's not enough for us as advisors to believe homeownership is possible for our clients. Building skills around budgeting and credit are important, but the impact of our work comes from the shift in our clients' money mindset that we help facilitate through our programming. The demand for our services has increased by approximately 150% in the last year while maintaining the integrity of our target market. Over 81% of our clientele identify as BIPOC, with 61% identifying as Black or African American. We attribute some of the increase in demand to the special purpose credit programs launched in the last year, namely the first generation programs in the state, county, and city levels, along with the Advancing Black Homeownership pilot. These resources have proved essential in bridging the gap in resources for our clients to have success competing in this housing market. So I urge the Senate to double down on your investment into HECAT, as it plays a pivotal role in helping families achieve and sustain homeownership. By investing in these educational resources, we are not just helping individuals, we're building stronger, more resilient communities for generations to come. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wills. That's the end of our testimony. Members, do you have questions? Seeing no questions, Senator Muhammad, do you have a final comment?
Thank you for considering this, and I'm starting to like this committee more and more.
With that, Senate File 1533 is laid over for possible inclusion. Next on the list is Senator Bolden's Senate File 1913. And as Senator Bolden gets settled at the table, members, I do see an author's amendment, the A2. Senator Bolden, like to move the A2. Members, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Senator Bolden, your bill is ready as amended. You can present when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'll just note the amendment we just adopted is just provide some technical and clarifying changes. So Senate File 1913 is an exciting opportunity to make a little investment from the general fund that will pay long-term dividends for decades to come. Throughout this session and in previous sessions, we've heard many bills in this committee that attempt to fill gaps in our housing system. We've heard a lot about affordable housing developers and operators who have had extreme difficulty in maintaining their properties. We know this is due in large part to the expense of operating costs. We also know we need investments in sustainable and long-term solutions. We know our federally funded programs, even when we can rely on the funding, which is not a given right now, has significant limitations that hamper the ability of housing providers to adequately cover operating costs. One area that we have not explored enough, in my view, is the role of our local municipalities, particularly our counties, in creating, owning, and maintaining housing for their communities. Known as locally owned housing, several counties in Minnesota have developed a sustainable response to the lack of consistently and permanently affordable housing in their communities. These programs are marked by a couple of characteristics that set them apart from other publicly funded programs. One, they are permanently affordable as they stay in the public trust for decades or longer. Two, they are self-sustaining. The flexibility in these programs allow counties to rent to a mix of income ranges for the purpose of meeting needs of various communities and to create a self-sustaining housing program that can keep up with ongoing costs. The higher rents and market rate rents help subsidize and pay for the entire locally owned program. This type of housing is a growing trend among counties in the metro and other counties, but needs state investments to help turn it into a self-sustaining model. For some counties, this model complements the affordable and private developers by filling holes where they can't or won't build. In my own district, Olmsted County HRA is a model of locally owned housing. They have a variety of housing types, include scattered site housing owned by the county itself. The mix of rents and the local levy help keep sustainable operating costs. And you will hear from our testifiers, both Olmsted County and Washington and other counties could be doing so much more with this model if they had access to capital. The creation of a new revolving fund at MHFA would be the start of a self-generating housing system that will complement our other state and federal programs. So, in short, this bill would create a revolving loan fund at MHFA, accessible by local municipalities. They can use the loan for developing, rehab, or building housing, allows them to meet the needs in their communities. And this housing must be owned by the municipality, at least a 75% ownership stake, and owned for 50 years. The bill lays out requirements for the types of affordability level in the bill, trying to ensure that counties use the fund to create sustainable housing that is mixed income. And with that, Madam Chair, would turn it over to testifiers to say more about why this bill is timely and necessary.
Thank you, Senator Bolden. First up for testimony, I have Farhan Bedell joining us online. After that, David Dunn, and then Melissa Taphorn. Mr. Bedell, if you would unmute.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Farhan Bedell. I apologize, I'm not able to get my camera working. My name is Farhan Bedell. I am a father of three. I live in Apple Valley. I am a renter. I'm the sole provider of my family. I grew up in the city of Minneapolis. I spent most of my childhood in the city, middle school, elementary, high school. In 2018, I married, and after my first newborn, we quickly learned how difficult it was and how expensive renting was in the city. A good friend of mine who lived in Burnsville called me and told me about a Dakota County program that's for working families, a housing that's locally owned and controlled. He told me to apply. At that time, I was working two jobs, and yet I still could not afford housing. I could not afford a two-bedroom in the city of Minneapolis. I was very fortunate enough to learn about this program. I applied for this program, and I was lucky enough to get this program. It changed our life. You know, right after the birth of my second child, here comes a new home, a housing that's affordable, and it was a big change in our life. This all we're asking here for this governing body is to support this bill because we need more affordable housing. This is housing that matters to working people, working families that are living paycheck to paycheck. We need more housing that's locally owned and controlled. This is housing that we desperately need, and we should not fall behind. We really need this housing, so I hope you, everyone in this governing body, vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bedell. Next up, Mr. Dunn, please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dave Dunn, and I serve as the Olmsted County Housing and Planning Director, which oversees the Olmsted County Housing and Redevelopment Authority. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate File 1913, which would establish a much-needed statewide fund for locally controlled housing development. The bill would allow important additional tool for local governments across Minnesota to create and preserve housing that would remain affordable for perpetuity. To illustrate how successful this could be, I wanted to highlight a project that we have recently done in Olmsted County that could be replicated with such a fund. In July of 2024, the Olmsted County Housing and Redevelopment Authority acquired the residence of Old Town Hall Estates, which is a 55-unit single-room occupancy building in Rochester. Currently, the building is housing Luther College students. After their lease expires in May, we will be transitioning the use of the building to house people previously experiencing homelessness. Our goal and our role as locally controlled housing is that we can be able to connect the case management necessary with the property management in order to make this permanent supportive housing a thriving community for everyone involved. The creation of a locally controlled fund would be critical in helping us in other counties and municipalities across the state. It provides flexibility, efficiency, and ability to quickly respond to market conditions. So I urge you in closing to support this file. It is a critical step toward building sustainable, affordable housing statewide. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Taphorn. Please begin your testimony when you're ready. And after that, I have Lucas Franco.
Good afternoon, Chair Port and members of the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee. My name is Melissa Taphorn. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County Community Development Agency, or CDA. We're the housing and economic development arm of Washington County. And I, too, am here today in support of Senate File 1913, a bill that would significantly help in the creation of new permanently affordable housing choices in our communities. For many years, the CDA has invested in locally owned housing options for our county. The CDA owns and operates 990 locally controlled housing units in 10 cities across our county, in addition to the 160 federally subsidized apartments that we have. These rental communities are owned by the CDA and funded with a mix of funding sources, including local levy and county bonding dollars. They are not federal public housing units, but they do belong to the public. We are looking for ways that we can add to the supply of our locally owned portfolio. As the housing needs in our communities have changed and increased, so has the diversity of those needs and the communities that are looking for this type of housing. Our residents in our communities not only need deeply affordable housing, but at all levels of that affordability, which I really like about this bill. We believe locally owned housing fits a key need that neither the private market nor the current public programs can fix alone. Where we typically come in with our CDA portfolio is when the city is asking us to look at a problem property, one that the private sector doesn't want to touch, one that has brownfield cleanup needs, is in a market. Half of our county is on septic systems. A lot of private developers won't touch drain fields, but the CDA, because we have a public purpose, will do that and will come in to meet those needs of the community. One example, our latest example, is the Glenet Valley Creek in the city of Woodbury. This was old homestead that had some contamination issues that we cleaned up. It's a tight site, and we were able to add 42 units of senior housing at 30, 50, and 60% of the area median income. We're very proud of that building. It's been open for 5 years exactly right now. And so it's just one of the examples that we have done on that 990. But this bill helps to fix three critical gaps in our current system, provides much needed immediate capital for counties ready, willing, and able to build more affordable housing, but lack those local funds. It expands a model of affordable housing that sustains itself by using market rate rents to subsidize the rents and pay for operating expenses and keeps subsidized housing permanently affordable. So with these state investments, we could unlock a powerful tool in the supply and affordability. The locally owned housing program is specifically designed to be self-sustaining, as has been said, using that mix of deeply affordable and market rate units. The program pays for itself. We strongly support this bill and the creation of such a fund that would increase supply of housing in Minnesota. Thank you, Senator Bolton, and to the committee for your time and your consideration of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Taphorn. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Franco. Please introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Port and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lucas Franco, and I'm here on behalf of Leuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota. We represent more than 14,000 skilled construction workers who build and maintain Minnesota's critical infrastructure. I'm here today to express strong support for Senate File 1913, which would establish a locally controlled housing fund. This legislation will spark innovation in housing production and represents a positive step towards solving our state's deepening housing crisis. As you all know very well, Minnesota faces a substantial shortage of affordable housing. Like other Minnesotans, our members are finding it increasingly difficult to afford to rent or buy a home. We've made progress addressing our housing needs, but we're nowhere near where we need to be. Senate File 1930 adds another tool to our housing infrastructure toolkit. Publicly owned and locally controlled housing has a number of advantages, which you've heard about in part, over the tax credit subsidy model that we primarily rely on for production. First, unlike traditional tax credit housing, publicly owned housing ensures that affordability never expires. That means no 30-year affordability limits, no speculative buyouts, just stable, accessible housing for working families like our members. Second, the revolving loan fund creates a self-sustaining public investment model where funds are repaid and reinvested into new projects. This approach ensures that Minnesota's housing supply grows without relying on market fluctuations. Third, it empowers local communities to build the housing that they need. Our members build Minnesota, but we cannot afford to live in the communities they serve. We often cannot. This bill ensures that cities and counties can directly finance housing for middle and lower income workers, keeping communities stable and ensuring that our workforce has secure, high quality housing. And fourth and finally, publicly led housing maximizes the use of public land, tax exempt bonds, and public financing to create high quality and mixed income housing that can self-sustain without constant subsidies. This is a smart investment in housing innovation. I urge you to support and pass Senate File 1913. Thank you for your time and consideration of this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Franco. Members, questions? Senator Bolden, final thoughts.
Well, thank you to the committee for hearing this bill. This is a flexible program that allows local counties to meet the needs of their housing in ways that work best for them. So allowing that flexibility and ability for counties to make decisions on what works for them based on what is needed is the right thing to do. So I appreciate you hearing the bill.
Thank you very much, Senator Bolden. With that, Senate File 1913 is laid over for possible inclusion. And folks, we're going to take a little jump in our agenda as Senator Nelson is here. So we will jump to your bill, Senator Nelson. Senate File 1906. And whenever you're ready, you can present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have my testifiers come up while I start speaking, maybe save you a bit of time.
Sure.
That would be Daniel Lightfoot, Darielle Dannon, and Libby Murphy. If y'all could come up, that'd be great.
Go ahead,
Thank you,
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for hearing Senate File 1906. I want to thank you for being a co-sponsor and Senator Housley, both for co-sponsoring this bill. This is a Senate File 1906. It's a fairly simple bill, and it seeks to make some small adjustments to the Minnesota State Housing Tax Credit parameters to better align this tax credit as a tool for needed workforce housing development in greater Minnesota. And just to one, set your mind at ease, we do not believe there will be a fiscal note, so that's always a plus. Of course, there wouldn't be a revenue estimate either. And just to kind of give you a little bit of background, the state housing tax credit allows eligible Minnesota taxpayers to contribute, to choose to contribute to the tax credit contribution fund. And in return, they receive a credit to help offset their tax liability. And just since you, just so you know, this used to be called, full disclosure, this was my bill many years ago. It took 6 years to get it passed, the Affordable Housing Tax Credit. It was passed in 2001, and since its inception in 2023, the name has been changed to the State Housing Tax Credit, which I think is a good name. But since its inception in 2023, the State Housing Tax Credit has sought to help housing development throughout the state. And the important thing I think to know is that it's leveraged millions of dollars from private investments to help support both rental and owner-occupied housing. So it's a good use to bring those. I felt that the housing crisis was so great. It was bigger than government. We needed to engage our philanthropers and our contributors as well. So this bill is actually just seeking to allow that state housing tax credit contribution count towards the match in one of our other housing programs, which you know is called the workforce housing. And just to be clear, that is defined as being in the outstate area, greater Minnesota, defined in statute as such. And Madam Chair, I'm wondering if this might be a good time for an amendment to just clarify that. I know I would like if there's somebody on the committee who might be able to clarify that, just so people don't have to go back and read that the workforce housing is about greater Minnesota. We can be a little more transparent and put it right in at the end of line 3.23. This requirement does not apply to a project, and if we could add the words outside the metropolitan area. Now, your staff might want to define metropolitan area by a particular statute. We have two statutes in our state that define the metropolitan area. The intent, Madam Chair, would be the 7-county metropolitan area.
Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
I'll move whatever amendment the author would like.
Thank you, Senator Abler. We'll give Ms. Painter a moment here and have her read it back when she's ready. Ms. Painter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The oral amendment would be page 3, line 23, following the word project, insert outside the 7-county metropolitan area.
And Senator Abler moves that amendment. Any questions or discussion on that, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And just to maybe give you a very brief summary of the bill, and then we'll turn it over to the testifiers. In section 1, lines 1.7 through 1.17, that just adjusts those matching requirements for the workforce housing projects to allow them to be funded by the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit. We already spoke about that. And they have to be in the greater Minnesota. We spoke about that. Also, members, in Section 2, it expands the use of funds. It clarifies that funds may be used for a variety of housing development purposes, including new construction, rehabilitation, demolition, acquisition, and financing. And then you'll also see in Section 2, there are regulatory incentives. And this bill allows preferences for proposals that include regulatory changes or waivers that reduce costs, such as increased housing density or flexibility. Those are just a couple examples. And then also, Madam Chair and committee members, in Section 3, you'll just see those eligibility restrictions. We further define so that we want to prevent conflicts of interest, not that there have been any, but we just want to be very perfectly clear that individuals or businesses who contribute to the tax credit account and receive a credit cannot directly benefit from the grants. That's only common sense, but I think it's essential that we have that reiterated in the bill. And then also in Section 3, you'll notice that it also expands eligibility for the grant and loan recipient to include cities, federally recognized American Indian tribes, tribal housing corporations, and private developers. And then lastly, again, Section 3, exemption for those certain projects. And it does provide an exemption to the income limit requirements for the specific workforce housing projects. So it allows greater flexibility in addressing local housing needs. I think my testifiers will probably speak to that. What we have found in far too many cases, people had to choose between a job and their housing. And so this is really designed as that workforce housing. So with that, Madam Chair, if we could hear from our testifiers.
Absolutely. Senator Nelson, I'm going to go to our virtual testifiers first. We have Mark Borseth, who Ms. Dannon submitted. Mr. Borseth, if you can hear us, go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Borseth, and I'm the Senior Director of Community Development and Corporate Facilities for DigiKey Electronics at Thief River Falls. And Chair Port and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding Senate File 1906. DigiKey does support this bill. You know, as we all know, Minnesota is short more than 100,000 housing units, which, you know, conservatively would cost, you know, far in excess of $25 billion to solve. So anything we can do to work towards a solution to this problem is a great improvement. You know, in Thief River Falls, we have a current vacancy rate of 0.3%. Inflation and interest rates are creating a challenging environment to alleviate, you know, this need across all types for all types of housing for all ages and income brackets. Our greatest demand at Thief River for housing is workforce housing, which we desperately need for DigiKey and others to grow and succeed in Minnesota. You know, our entry-level starting wage at DigiKey is above the income limits qualified for most housing income-restricted programs. So the proposed amendments for workforce housing projects that eliminate income restrictions for the Housing Tax Credit Contribution Program when paired with the Workforce Housing Fund, along with the proposed match revisions, result in a real beneficial alignment. We are currently utilizing the Minnesota Housing Tax Credit Contribution Fund in Thief River and are really thankful for this program. Mm-hmm. So any reduction in income restrictions or reduction in match requirements for workforce housing would be of great assistance for Thief River Falls and all of outstate Minnesota. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you, Senator Nelson, for carrying this bill, and happy to answer any questions you may have for me.
Thank you, Mr. Borseth. Next up, I have Skip Duchesneau. Mr. Duchesneau, if you would introduce yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Port and members of the Senate Housing and Homelessness Prevention Committee. As stated, my name is Skip Duchesneau. I'm the president of DW Jones, Inc. We're an affordable and market-rate multifamily developer located in Walker, Minnesota. Our area that we work in is north of St. Cloud and Douala borders. We get calls from communities all over northern Minnesota looking to help solve their housing problems. There is nowhere near enough funds to solve all these problems, but we do get success one project at a time. I would like to first thank you for past funding of Minnesota Housing Finance, the Workforce Housing Development Program, and the State Housing Tax Credit Program. All these programs are critical to the development of housing in Greater Minnesota. I live in Greater Minnesota, I work in Greater Minnesota, and I do understand the dynamics that take place here. Our firm has been successful in developing workforce housing development properties when the program was administered by deed and now at Minnesota Housing Finance. We have received funding for 8 projects in communities of Thief River Falls, Glenwood, Pelican Rapids, Alexandria, Long Prairie, Roseau, and War Road. These funds have allowed us to develop a total of 348 units constructed and occupied, housing valuable employees for local employers. We also have 64 units under construction in Alexandria right now. We are proud of the partnerships we have developed with employers such as Marvin Windows, Polaris, DigiKey, and Long Prairie Packing. Last year, Minnesota Housing Finance had the largest amount of funds available for the Workforce Housing Development Program it ever had. And once again, we thank you for that. The agency had record requests from all over the state, but it was only able to fund approximately 50% of the applications. We had applications submitted that did not get awarded in Ely, Silver Bay, Roseau, Thief River Falls, Fergus Falls, and Brainerd. These were all great projects, and we felt so bad that they were not able to, we were not able to help these communities. We've also received our first state housing tax credit contribution in 2024. This contribution will allow us to move forward in Thief River Falls with a project that did not get funded, as previously mentioned. It is hard to develop in Greater Minnesota right now. The numbers simply do not work. High construction costs, interest rates, make it almost impossible to develop in Greater Minnesota without assistance, excluding some of the larger communities such as Duluth and Rochester. Because we have experience with the State Housing Tax Credit and Workforce Housing Development Program, we firmly believe you should support the changes being requested by SF 1906. By removing income restrictions from the State Housing Tax Credit, as Mr. Borseth had pointed out, and paired with Workforce Housing Development dollars, it will allow us to do more and bring employer funding into the mix. We work in communities where the 80% AMI is too high for local workforce. If we want employers to participate in what will be more successful without income restrictions, the state will not solve the housing problem all by themselves. Getting community-minded employers to help solve housing issues in their communities will benefit them is the answer. We need employers to help solve this problem. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we will go to Libby Murphy. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, Chair Bolden and members of the committee. My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at the Minnesota Housing Partnership. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all today. Minnesota is extremely fortunate to have the State Housing Tax Credit. It's a simple and flexible program. The State Housing Tax Credit bill was initiated by a large coalition of businesses, local government, and housing leaders across Minnesota. In partnership with many who develop housing in Greater Minnesota, the program was designed to be simple, flexible, and work in rural areas as well as in the metro. It was designed so that it could support projects that don't always compete well in Minnesota Housing's Qualified Action Plan, Allocation Plan. Last year, Minnesota Housing Partnership, along with Mary Tinkerthal, the former commissioner of Minnesota Housing, conducted a number of feedback or listening sessions with those who had utilized the State Housing Tax Credit in 2023 or were looking forward to utilizing the credit. Some of the feedback that we heard was that there was confusion and concern about pairing the tax credit and the Greater Minnesota Workforce Housing Program together. Because state statute requires Minnesota Housing to prioritize projects that are completely market rate when awarding workforce development program dollars, developers went in seeking contributions from businesses as well as local individuals for state housing tax credits without being able to certify that they would also then be competitive for Greater Minnesota Workforce program dollars. So that is a welcome change, as well as allowing the state tax credit contributions to serve as matching funds for the Greater Minnesota Workforce Development Program. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. And last, we will hear from Daniel Lightfoot.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Lightfoot with the League of Minnesota Cities. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today on the bill. Senate File 1906, and also I want to appreciate the Senator Nelson's efforts, not just on this bill, but the creation of the tax credit itself and having carried the original bill. It's great to continue to be working on this issue. So we certainly know that cities and their developer partners, along with the private sector, all play a key role in helping to address housing needs that foster local economic development, grow communities, and support job growth. And it was in that spirit that the state housing tax credit was created as a flexible tool to provide an incentive for both corporate and individual taxpayers to contribute to that housing tax credit fund and also fund individual projects in their city to help support that housing development for local economic growth. The program, as you heard, allows companies like DigiKey, we heard from Mark, to directly support housing projects that they need to support their growth in areas like Thief River Falls that simply do not have enough housing to support business expansion. It also helps support developers like Skip, who we heard from as well, as another tool to help bridge that financing gap that is ever present, especially in Greater Minnesota housing development. Despite the program's success in 2024, having been fully subscribed of the $9.9 million in tax credits, Senate File 1906 tweaks the program to better align the tax credit program to the unique needs of Greater Minnesota, which is the creation of market-rate workforce housing. Currently, the tax credit is limited to income-restricted projects, and this change allows Greater Minnesota projects that are eligible for the market-rate workforce housing development fund to also receive state housing tax credit contributions without being income-restricted. This change will make Minnesota projects more competitive in Greater Minnesota, provide more certainty for developers working on market-rate workforce housing projects, that their project can receive contributions and create more certainty for businesses like DigiKey, developers like Skip, in knowing that their contribution is going to a workforce housing project that is needed in their community in Greater Minnesota. With that, Madam Chair, members, happy to stand for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Nelson, any other comments before we move to questions and discussion?
No, I'll save my closing comments after the questions.
Very good. Members, questions or comments? Seeing none, your final comments, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members for the time to speak about this. I am hoping for a positive move here as we look at enhancing workforce housing availability. That is key to economic growth for our citizens, and it's unfortunate when people have to choose between taking a job and losing their housing. We want to make sure that this workforce housing is available. And also, I like the fact that it encourages public-private partnerships. You know, the state needs our private partners to step up, particularly our employers, to help with this gap between wages and housing affordability. And I think this helps do that. I also am very happy that we're really supporting our rural areas, which oftentimes have some of the most desperate gaps in housing costs and jobs. And in fact, you know, we believe that it's jobs that is really going to help drive the economic growth throughout this state. But if employers cannot get the workers they need, then of course we're stifling that. So, and then also, I didn't mention this much, but there's also some even tighter language about preventing conflicts of interest, which I always think is important, and it will help with the workforce shortage. So I had asked the committee for its thoughtful, positive move on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And with that, Senate File 1906 is laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus.
Thank you very much.
All right, members, we're going to go back to Senate File 1711. Senator Putnam can make his way to the table. And as you are ready, you may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1711 is very straightforward. It's very expensive, but it's very straightforward. It is basically $30 million a year in 26 and 27, transferred from the General Fund to the Housing Development Fund. And that is for workforce home ownership programs. And members, I've mentioned this before in this committee, that I've, as Ag Chair, I've gone on a tour of the state every summer, and I've been to over 90 farms. And the number of farmers who have told me that their biggest concern is workforce housing in Greater Minnesota, it's a significant and substantial problem throughout the state, but specifically for our agricultural economy, which, as long as I'm here, I will mention, is about a third of our GDP, and one in five jobs is also about agriculture, and yet still we get 0.5% of the state budget. That has nothing to do with housing, but I just felt like saying it. For this this specific bill, the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program provides a one-time grant to community partners and nonprofits to support the development of workforce and affordable homeownership opportunities. It serves low to moderate income households and funds a range of housing initiatives, including new construction, acquisition, land development, rehabilitation, and construction costs. These funds help bridge the affordability gap and value gap by making homeownership more accessible. The Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Program has been a proven pipeline for creating affordable homeownership opportunities, and reinvesting this money and ensuring continued investments in the Workforce Affordable Homeownership Program would produce over 500 new entry-level owner-occupied homes statewide, sustain and expand the pipeline of workforce and affordable homeownership projects, and increase homeownership opportunities for low and moderate income households. Madam Chair, members, that's what I've got about the bill itself. We have some testifiers here to talk to us a little bit more about it.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Putnam. We will move to testimony. Our first testifier is virtual, Jeff Washburn. Please unmute yourself and introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Putnam. My name is Jeff Washburn. I serve as the administrator for the Minnesota Community Land Trust Coalition. Minnesota CLT Coalition is also a member of the HOME Coalition, Affordable Home Ownership Coalition, supporting affordable home ownership in the state. The Minnesota Community Land Trust Coalition supports 14 community land trusts across the state of Minnesota, serving 82 of the 87 counties in the state. As of the end of last year, there were over 1,600 permanently affordable home ownership homes in the state. And perhaps equally or maybe even more important is the number of 734 resales that have occurred in community land trust home ownership over the last 20 or so years. Those are 730 plus homes that didn't require additional subsidy to keep them affordable. So the state and other funders funded them once at some point over the last 20 or 30 years, and they remain permanently affordable. And one of the benefits, I think one of the key benefits, especially to the state of Minnesota, is that ability to not only create affordable home ownership, but to keep those homes permanently affordable here in Minnesota. Little unknown fact is that there are more affordable ownership land trust units in the state of Minnesota than any other state in the United States. And a good part of that is due to the state's investment in community land trust over the past many years. Key to that, and I think as Senator Putnam mentioned, is the Workforce Affordable Home Ownership Program. Through my own calculations, it looks like close to $49 million has been invested in this fund or has gone through the agency to invest in affordable home ownership programs and homes across the state over the last 3 years. Roughly $19 million of those dollars has gone to community land trust statewide, and that has or will yield well over 200 permanently affordable homes in the state. So these dollars are doing work. The community land trusts are contributing to its efforts of creating affordable home ownership across the state of Minnesota, and in doing so in a way that is serving households below 80% of median income, typically serving households of color at rates of 2 to 6 times the rate of ownership for households of color in the respective areas served by those community land trusts, and again, making a huge impact. Just want to thank you for your time and consideration of continuing to fund the Workforce Affordable Home Ownership Program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Washburn. Next, we'll hear from Chad Booley. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today. My name is Chad Booley, whatever you prefer. I'm the executive director of Central Minnesota Habitat for Humanity. We've served families in first-time home ownership, about 110, a little over 110 families in the four counties of Stearns, Benton, Sherburn, and Wright counties. And I've been the executive director for a couple years, and one of the first things that the community feedback told me is that, as mentioned here, workforce housing and the ability to work in the city has been stammered by the ability to purchase homes. So we do work in the 35 to 80% average median income to serve families and to get more folks in for employment. The need is obviously immense, and I don't need to reiterate that or go into statistics. I think we've felt that today. I can tell you that we build about 2 homes a year, and our application process is currently closed, and we have about 550 families waiting for us to reopen our applications right now. So the need is certainly immense, and the impact of the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership program has been immense for us. Maybe a little bit of background. We build our homes with high schools. We currently build our homes with St. Cloud Tech High School and Sartell High School. So we have an added advantage, I guess, of serving students as they're building homes, getting real life work experience. And about 50% of those that work on the homes go into the trades or post-secondary education in the trades. So we really have a win-win, and the community loves it. These funds are going to allow us to expand. We are currently in the final stages of expanding into Elk River School District, and we are also looking at Buffalo High School as another one. So the demand from that perspective and the community feedback has been fantastic. As I mentioned, we build about 2 homes a year. This year, due to this funding that we received, we will be doing 5, including some rehabilitation work. So it's already been a huge win for us. And lastly, the funding that we received leveraged the opportunity for us to work with a private lender who is bringing millions of dollars to the table for us and purchasing our mortgages from us, which will allow us to immediately put more money back into our programs to build more. And we're going to be opening up an open market program where families can come qualify for a mortgage, go through home stretch and all the home buyer education classes, and purchase a home on the MLS where they want, the size they want, and the school district they want, by the employment they want. And so it's going to really be an empowering opportunity for them. So I can't stress enough how important this funding has been to us in Central Minnesota Habitat, and I expect that will continue, and very much appreciate the opportunity and thank Senator Putnam for championing these investments. And thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Our last testifier will be Kristen Nsidi. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today in support of the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program. My name is Kristen Nsidi, and I am the President and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota. Habitat Minnesota is a state support organization that provides training, technical assistance, lending, grants, and other support to 24 Habitat affiliates throughout Minnesota, just like Chad Bowley's affiliate. They serve 59 counties across the state. And you just heard from Chad about the need in Central Minnesota, as been communicated throughout the entire committee today. We know that there's a deep need across the state, an estimated 100,000 units or more of a variety of housing production needs across the state. And so without sustained investment, the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Development Program faces a severe funding shortfall, which would significantly reduce affordable homeownership production in Minnesota. This crucial program was funded at $60.5 million in the last budget cycle, and recently Habitat Minnesota and local affiliates across the state were directly and indirectly awarded funds for projects through this pool. For example, it's helping us serve households earning between 30 and 80% area median income across the whole state. And just 2 additional examples in other regions. One example is relocating and rehabilitating a donated home in Truman. This program is supporting the relocation, rehab, and resale of a donated house house to serve a household below 80% area median income. A local church donated that home to Habitat for Humanity of Martin Faribault Counties and will move it from Louisville to a small rural community of Truman. Once placed on a new foundation, the home will undergo extensive rehab, including being stripped down to the studs and replumbed. This is an example of taking our aging housing stock in Greater Minnesota and repurposing it to create more entry-level housing and ownership opportunities. The second thing that I wanted to note is workforce housing in Cass County. Using these funds, Lakes Area Habitat for Humanity in Brainerd, who serves Crow Wing, Cass, Wadena, and Hubbard County, is partnering with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwa to create affordable owner-occupied homes there, and it's a unique workforce connection opportunity. So these are just a couple examples of these investments, providing development resources to meet local needs and funding the programs at these levels, and noting, too, that this bill implements an ongoing investment in the base budget is critical for our work in Habitat as well as other affordable ownership providers and suppliers. Having those predictable sources will help us plan into the future and be efficient and effective use of the state's resources ongoing. So without these resources, affordable ownership production in Minnesota will decline dramatically, and we just ask for your continued support in increasing investments to ensure strong, stable communities across the state. Thank you, Senator Putnam, for your leadership on this bill, and Madam Chair and the members of the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of the bill.
Thank you for your testimony. That is the end of our testifier list. Senator Putnam, any comments before we move to questions from members?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, questions or comments? All right. Seeing none, Senate File 1711 will be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus. All right, members, we are at the end of our agenda for today. There being no other business, this meeting is adjourned.